You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre. A place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday of each month at 10 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM. Or KBOO.FM. Where we make musical structures for the listeners.
Support for The Dirtbag comes from KBOO listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Are we on here? Yes, indeed. This is the second Wednesday of the month. We've reached the 11 o'clock hour. It's time for The Dirtbag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen. Here beside you now until 12 noon. And here beside me, to my right, over here, is Jim Gilbert.
Morning, Glenn. Good to be here.
Yes, indeed. Back to spring weather after a couple of weeks or more of summer weather.
I know. I'm actually happy to see it.
Yeah.
Planting some figs and some other stuff. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Our Dirtbag dictionary this time is soil temperature. Mm. So when is it okay to plant certain things? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's a little rundown here on what we've got going here. Most used tool during the month. Just think about that, Jim, and then we'll come back to that there, too. If you have any questions that arise during the show, please don't hesitate to give us a call. 503-231-8187. We will do our best to BS our way through it.
That's right.
No, we usually have a stab at an answer.
Yeah, yeah. Love questions. So
okay.
Yeah, please call.
More the better. We will have watering tips. We don't need really to do it right this week, but we will offer supplemental water.
Yeah.
You know, I posed the question on the blurb that I wrote for the KBOO website. You know, what's the difference between watering and irrigation?
Mm.
Is it the size of the operation?
Scale, I would say. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Water a plant, but you irrigate a field. You don't water a field.
No,
you don't
irrigate a plant. Okay.
Yep.
Maybe that's a good working definition right there.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And then, well, I think we'll have a rather interesting discussion on what can or how can plants get pollinated. And I didn't bring any figures along here, but we'll just tell you right off the bat that it's not bees that is the number one pollinator of plants. At half past the hour, we have the garden stumper. The caller with the first correct answer will win a tool sharpening, a free tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store. This tool can be any hand tool, gardening hand tool. I suppose if he brought a chisel in, he'd sharpen that.
There must be a fair number of sharp tools in Portland.
Well, surprisingly, there's not a big percentage that actually cash in.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man. Oh, okay.
But boy, does a sharp tool help.
Yep.
And as we say, it's probably safer, too, because you're more careful. Then, I forgot my glasses, so I'm struggling here. What's going on in our gardens and farms? And then, and that includes what plant breeding is going on out at the Northwoods Nursery. Do you ever call it NN? N2? Northwoods Nursery?
No.
Okay.
We call it half plant factory and half research station. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's that's another coming up then after all that, then we'll talk our dirtbag dictionary term and lessons that Jim may have learned on his recent travels, or anybody that's learned.
Yeah, sure.
But the I may have mentioned this before of what I'm trying to understand, but one just occurred to me that, in case I'm repeating the other one, and this may be a repeat, but two repeats equals one show. And that is, we don't understand the difference between an acronym and initials. For example, the National Oceanic Atmospheric whatever it is, NOAA.
Yep.
We pronounced it NOAA. I just did. Yep. That is an acronym. What about the Federal Bureau of Investigation?
Yeah.
What do we call that?
FBI.
Right. Is that an acronym? No. No, because we just are pronouncing the initials.
The letter. Oh.
So those are just the initials.
Never thought of it.
Acronym is when you actually make a word of it, from my understanding. At least I'm trying to understand that.
Well, maybe there's somebody out there in the audience that would
help educate me.
Yeah, sure.
And then the other one that I'm trying to understand is why, and this is on, I listen to a lot of public radio, and more I'm hearing broadcasters of all ages, I mean, not real old ones, like Nina, she's not going to do this, but it's the absence of the pronunciation of the letter T in many words. One that I hear specifically mangled is leaving the first T out of important. And it's just, it's pronounced, they say important. Important. No first T. Just listen for that. And I'm wondering why that is. Here's another something, Jim, that I did get an answer from. When we learn to write, pick up that pen and say you're going to write your name, just like you're going to write your name.
Yeah.
Right. See, you have the pen between your first and second finger.
Mm-hmm.
But if you notice now, younger people, they will use three fingers and the thumb, like this, if you can see my fingers.
Oh, yeah.
And I asked a retired elementary teacher, what's up? And she said, that is how they're teaching it now. So that explains why I'm seeing, virtually probably anybody under 30 do that.
Well, I'm going to have to check with I'm going to be seeing my grandkids tomorrow.
Just don't say anything. Ask them to write
something. Yeah, I'm going to ask to see what they do. That's a good point. Interesting.
Jim, would you get me back on topic here? This is a gardening show.
That's right.
But it is a garden variety show.
That's right. Well, what are the... it's like what KMHD says, this is jazz without boundaries, right? So this is this is gardening without boundaries.
Oh, we can garden into our neighbor's property? No comment.
Yeah.
Okay. So your tool that you've been using the most in the last month.
Well, I thought I would, I was thinking about it as you said that, and I thought I use a lot of tools, but I'm going to talk about the spade. Because I'm planting plants. And I thought I should just mention a little bit. It's like one of those things that comes to you as you get older and you realize, okay, there's a shovel and there's a spade, and they are different tools. And a lot of younger people, or you know, probably my grandkids, don't know this difference. I'm going to have to teach them this weekend, probably. But the spade, in my definition of it, is a straight tool that you have a handle, and then the blade comes out pretty much straight from the handle, and it's kind of flattish, and it's good for digging. Mm-hmm. The shovel is a scoop type. It has an angle at the end, and it's more scoopy. And it's good for moving things around, but it's not really good for digging because you have to hold it way out the handle, wait to go straight down. You have to hold the handle out at about a 45-degree angle to get it to go down to the ground. So I've been using a spade.
A spade, okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, because you're digging holes.
I'm digging holes.
All right. I think I've been using the hoe.
Mm.
I've been so busy with bees that the weeds are taking over. Not taken over. No, that's not true. But I kind of like hoeing a little bit, especially when it's hot weather, and I just leave the weeds there and they wither up. But
and you know, it's funny to say this, but I'll have to say about another tool just real quickly.
Okay.
My fingers.
Well, yes.
Because when I'm planting these plants, they're typically root bound. Mm-hmm. And I yesterday, I mean, my fingers got tired. I mean, it just pulling those roots apart from this big mass that they're in, that's a lot of work.
Okay, then the question is, gloved or ungloved?
They're ungloved, man. They're tough. Okay. They're tough.
Yeah, they're tough until you get a splinter.
Well, thankfully, roots aren't typically
that's true. That's
splintery.
True. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All righty, then. Okay, our plant of the month. I will tell you that it is one that I'm going to talk about, not reluctantly, but hopefully I'll steer you straight.
Mm.
And that is the pear tomatoes, the yellow pear tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, why would you plant them? Now, maybe there's some good varieties, but the ones that I've almost always had and eaten and even grown is they're not very flavorful or sweet. And if you're going to grow a cherry tomato, why not get one that it just depends what you want, I guess.
Is it the shape that appeals to people?
Maybe. I think so. Mm-hmm. One of the benefits, though, that I will say is that they seem to be tougher, and in late fall, I can harvest many more of those than some of the others because they don't crack nearly as much. I don't grow them now, but I do grow another type of cherry tomato that is yellow but does grow. Has a little tougher skin, so it doesn't crack.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's all I'm going to say about it.
Hmm.
Just choose your varieties.
Yeah. So pear tomato is sort of interesting.
It's a cherry tomato. But
yeah. Just the pear, just from the shape of it.
Yeah.
But that's funny. I'm trying to think of a fruit that has a name like that. There's not a tomato pear.
I don't know.
No, it wouldn't be. But it would be any sense, you know, because tomato is just round, typically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do they have? Are there that red of a pear that you know of? I know I have. Well, I know they are the red Bartlett.
Yeah,
that can be. That turns yellow and then red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not maybe as bright red. Like
you're
a
right.
Tomato, but
and not as solid. But it's a good pear.
Yeah.
Red Bartlett, unlike the yellow, the pear tomato.
Okay, got it.
Okay, yeah, also sometimes known as the teardrop, although I've never called it that, but that's the shape of it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm just going to get to our musical breaks right away. Ty looks like he's ready to go on that. And our theme, this, you know, I try to have a somewhat topical theme. And this one, I tried smoke, but I didn't find anything that I really liked, three tunes. And so I centered on white. You know, I said white smoke. That was the big news last week, you know, when the Pope was announced that they had gotten to the guy, to Bob.
Yeah.
And so I've chosen three tunes, and one of them has white in the title of the song. One has white in the name of the disc, the CD, and the other has white in the composer. Well, first of all, we'll start with the title, Top Hat, White Tie, and Tails. And this is an Irving Berlin song sung wonderfully by Ella Fitzgerald. Ready to go, Ty? Blast off.
I'm putting on my top hat, tying up my white tie, brushing off my tails. I'm dooting up my shirt front, putting in the shirt studs, polishing my nails. I'm stepping out, my dear, to breathe an atmosphere that simply reeks with class. And I trust that you'll excuse my dust when I step on the gas. For I'll be there, putting down my top hat, bussing up my white tie, dancing in my tails. I just got an invitation through the mails. Your presence requested this evening. It's formal, a top hat, a white tie, and tails. Nothing now could take the wind out of my sails. Because I'm invited to step out this evening with top hat and white tie and tails. I'm putting on my top hat, tying up my white tie, brushing off my tails.
Okay.
I got a quick story to tell you.
Okay.
This is Gardening Without Boundaries. In 1961, I was a senior at Madison High School, now the name has changed, and I wore my grandfather's white tie and tails to senior dress-up day.
Wow.
And I got kicked out. I had to go home and change my clothes. That was the old days, you know. But it was fun. I got my picture in the yearbook.
Before you left.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I've got a story, too. And that big disappointment of my life. Well, I shouldn't say that. It was a disappointment. This was probably about 1985. And one of the first years of they used to have the Mount Hood Festival, the Mount Hood Jazz Festival. And they booked Ella Fitzgerald. And she's always been one of my favorite vocalists. And gosh darn it, with a week or less to go, she canceled out. I think she was sick or something. They did replace her with Carmen McRae, which, you know, not a bad second choice. But it was a lost opportunity.
Yeah.
That was 40 years ago, and I'm still thinking about it, complaining about it. I've moved on, though. I still listen to her.
As am I, complaining about my being kicked out.
Kicked out. Okay. All right, back to gardening here. Well, let's talk about watering, irrigation. Watering is the main thing. But if you were irrigating a bed, even, I suppose you could talk about that.
Yeah. One of the things I talk with people about in watering, and a lot of time, I mean, when we had the retail business, we've talked to a lot of people about watering. You know, it's a subject that needs probably, you know, a lot of people need to think about, because there's sort of tendency in some people's cases to water a little bit every day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you're and what happens when you do that is you tend to force, especially in a potted plant, you tend to get the roots to grow toward the top of the plant, top of the pot, not to the bottom.
Where there's water.
So I'm a big believer in deep watering it less frequently, both pots and field in the ground. But of course, in pots, you've got to be a little more careful, because if your pot gets root bound, it may need more water. Yeah, just true. Because it's going to use it up faster, and you see any wilt or anything happening, you want to definitely give it a good soaking. But generally speaking, a deep watering less frequently is I think better for plant health, long term plant health,
and probably use less water.
Well, certainly when the roots go down, they get into moister soil down below.
Right.
And,
so less work for the gardener / farmer.
That's right.
In the long run.
Yep.
And yeah. I think one of the ways to encourage that is to have a watering system rather than hand watering. Because if you have drip or sprinkle or, you know, light a touch on the soil over a longer period, a half an hour or however long it needs, you're not going to stand around for a half an hour on each plant. And if the, you know, the water's coming out of the hose end pretty quickly, and it won't soak in, it'll run off. So you could come back and come back again and come back again, you know, all in a, you know, a short time. And it depends how many plants you have to water. But generally a system is better.
Yeah, so as simple as a sprinkler and as
right.
complicated as a drip system with T-tape or some, you know, emitters or something.
Right.
That's what we use at the nursery.
Maybe we should, maybe next month we should have a little bit, you could talk about T-tape.
Sure.
How you do it and, yeah. you know, is it applicable for, you know, a smaller gardener in the city? Mm-hmm. And I would argue, yes. It's pretty yeah. easy. It's very easy to put down
yeah.
and to take up.
Yeah, and you get the fittings are easy to get and hook them up to your garden hose and just turn it on.
And, yeah, and there's timers. Well, maybe we'll talk about this next week.
Yeah, sure.
Or next time.
Yeah.
Which, if all goes according to plan, we will record ahead of time.
That's right. That's right.
So, okay, anything else you want to say about watering?
I think that's the main thing right now. Right now, well, when it was hot, I was starting to worry because the ground was getting kind of dry on
yes.
the surface. You know, now that we've had some rain, I think we're probably okay for a while. But
yeah, I think one day, the biggest day on my home gauge, it was half an inch. Mm-hmm. But yesterday, just 4/100 of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less than an inch of rain of water.
Yeah.
And they say for lawn anyway, that it needs about an inch a week or something like that for a lawn.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that we're having cool weather too, and even if it's not raining, it's definitely not, there's the stress
not,
on the plants
yeah,
is
not
much reduced. So,
yeah.
I should mention one thing. I mean, it's the middle of May and I'm planting plants. I hope most of our listeners have finished planting, but if you're still planting stuff,
you're talking about fruit trees and
yeah.
whatnot, because vegetables are just beginning.
Yeah. I talk about, you know, bushes, vines, shrubs, trees.
Perennials.
But, yeah. But watering them in is still important, you know, even though it might
yeah.
have rained and the soil feels somewhat moist after you plant, give them a good watering. I try I use a watering can and try to put like about a gallon of water around the area where the plant is planted. And if it's a container plant that you're planting, be sure to water at the base of the plant because that's where the massive roots are still until they start to get out into the soil.
Yeah. I think a catch basin in this time of year is not a bad idea. You know, a plate or something like that if you're in a pot.
Oh, yes.
Because it's just,
yeah, sure.
it drains out, and that just a little bit insurance.
Uh-huh. Just some moisture on the root system to
yeah.
the bottom. Yeah.
One more thing on watering. The recommendation is to water earlier in the morning rather than in the heat of the day. Just more efficient. You're not going to, not as much is going to evaporate off. And if any of the foliage gets wet, then it has ample time to dry before mm-hmm. fungal diseases can
yep.
get a foothold there.
Good point. Yep.
All right. Well, let's, before we get to our garden stumper, how can plants be pollinated? Oh, wait a minute. Yes, right. This doesn't have anything to do with your, does it have anything to do with your garden stumper coming up?
No.
No, okay.
Well, a tiny
right.
bit.
All right. Well, steer around that if you can.
Yeah.
I'm always plow right through and then give the answer away sometimes. But
No, it won't do anything like that. No.
Well, we had a discussion. We started this when Jim suggested this idea on you know, how or what pollinates plants. And like I said earlier in the show, I did not bring in my notes and whatnot. I've just been too swamped. And so there's many different ways that plants can be pollinated, and this runs from probably the, I can't remember if it's flies or beetles. I think it's beetles that do worldwide pollinate the most plants. And we're not talking now about edible plants necessarily. We're just talking about all plants. Mm-hmm. And then in the hallway here before Jim and I came on, we discussed, well, maybe the bigger pollinator or pollinizer, if you will, is not an insect at all, but the wind. And, yeah. You know, it might be, you know, it's probably debatable. Maybe one of our listeners has that information, but all grasses, are like corn, that's wind pollinated, although there are some insects that, even honeybees, that will collect the pollen. I don't think they have any nectar at all in corn. So anyway, that's let's not discount the wind.
Yeah, trees. I mean, you mentioned conifers. Forests full of trees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty quiet during pollination season. There's not much bee action at the Douglas firs that I know about.
And to just maybe to come at this from a different angle is that nobody suffers from, say, apple pollen allergies or fig fig pollen. Wait, well, that's not a good example, but you know, essentially any of the cherry trees, because they rely on insects.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
But, you know, but ragwort or hay fever, you know, from hay, grasses, you know, that's the plants just produce, I don't know how many trillions of pollen grains. Not each plant probably doesn't have a trillion, but
a billion.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Lots.
Yeah. So the fruit trees and whatnot do require insects.
Yeah, typically. There are some wind pollinated
fruits.
Yeah.
Like what?
Olive.
Olive. Uh-huh.
And a nut. Nuts. Our old native hazelnut is wind pollinated. Interesting.
So yeah, it's a different way to look at it.
Yeah.
And I would argue somewhat vociferously that all pollination is inadvertent. Like the insect doesn't set out to pollinate a plant. And the wind certainly doesn't, you know, obviously. We got that. But the insects, what they're really after is the nectar. Obviously, honeybees and other, maybe all bees, are vegetarians, and so they only use or they only eat pollen and nectar.
You know, I'm thinking, Glenn, one of the reasons I suggested this, and I have to admit that I have a little, I'm over it now pretty much, but I had some jet lag in the last few days from our trip, coming back from our trip. But my memory tells me that I wanted to mention this pollination thing because, in particular, one plant that we grow here that I love, and one of the ones I visited on my trip and went specifically to New Zealand for, the pineapple guava, or more commonly known as the feijoa, is typically pollinated by birds that eat the flower petals, and in the process of eating the sweet flower petals, they move pollen around.
Mm-hmm. In line with my inadvertent. Yeah,
yes, and not typically do we know that they're insect pollinated, but we think there must be some because we get fruit set, and our birds, we haven't succeeded in training them to eat the flower petals.
What kind of bird is it? Just indigenous to
it's the, a bird that's native to New Zealand and also Brazil, obviously, where the plant is native to. So we're not, you know, I don't know for sure which bird it is, but it doesn't live in our area, at least as far as I can tell. So what I wanted to suggest to folks out there, the pineapple guava feijoa is not yet blooming, but it's getting close. When it blooms, just to be sure that you get some fruit sets, and if you should hopefully have two plants, take a flower from one. Just take the full flower. You can, and you'll know, you'll see the pollen in the stamens around the center of the fruit, the flower, and take it to the other plant and do some dusting. just sort of brush it over a few more other flowers and do that, you know, as much as you want, back and forth.
So you're not suggesting picking the flowers, just bending the branch.
I'm suggesting picking the flowers, yeah.
Oh, okay, so you're thinning it in the meantime.
Hopefully you'll have a lot of flowers. If you only had one or two flowers, that might not be
so. Yeah. Well, you could bend the branches with them.
Right. Somehow get them to know each other some other means. But that's sort of – then humans become the pollinator.
Yeah, right.
And we're doing it by hand. But it's I've done that. I'm doing that sometimes with plants just when I want to make sure I get some fruit. Another reason we do that is for breeding purposes because we'll cross – two different varieties with hand pollination because we want to make sure that the pollen from one gets on the other and no insects bring something we don't want. So anyway, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, last month too, we talked about perfect flowers. So apparently the feijoa has a perfect flower.
It's a perfect flower.
Yeah. And that means that it has both nectar, male and female parts of the flower. So when we're dusting from one, that's the male pollen.
The male pollen, right? The yellow, the yellow pollen around the pistil, what's in the center.
Yeah. And then there's other, besides humans, there's another mammal that pollinates, and that's bats.
Mm.
They're a pollinator. It's oftentimes in deserts.
Huh.
They go there. Moths. Maybe moths more than butterflies, but both of the Lepidoptera can act as pollinators. And of course, I mentioned beetles.
Yeah.
And ants will do some pollinating.
Flies.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's an amazing process that has gone on for a lot longer than we've been around.
Right. And then, of course, so we can get a plant pollinated, but does that pollen then germinate? That's a whole nother story. We can get the pollen to the receptive ovule of the receptor, but then the pollen has to germinate and grow down to pollinate or to impregnate, if you will, the egg of the flower.
Yeah.
So we can have pollination, but not germination, or fertilization, excuse me. Pollination without fertilization.
I'm not so familiar with that because if it's a compatible flower, I mean, you can't pollinate an olive with a pear, for example.
Right. Well, the pollen sticks to the stigma, but it still has to grow. I mean, you have to have fertilization.
So are you thinking like this would be something maybe air, maybe temperature could have something to do
weather,
with that?
Yes,
right.
And maybe water rain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So, we can just say somewhat offhand, that humans do this frequently, have pollinization without fertilization. That's all we're going to say on that. I think it's time for the garden stumper.
Yeah, back to the boundaries.
Yeah. Okay, it is time for the garden stumper. Ty's ready. Okay, Jim, here it comes. Well, maybe not.
Ty, know where.
Should be there. Well, anyway, you go ahead with the garden. Your garden stumper, Jim.
Okay.
And we'll tell you I'll tell you right now the number to call.
Here it is. Yay.
This is the number that you're going to call, 503-231-8187.
And you get if you get it right, you get a sharpening of your
garden tool.
Hand tool.
Yes.
And I think that's a pretty darn nice thing.
So, yes.
So this is a little bit of a story, Glenn. So in 1990, I made my first overseas journey of my life. I've been traveled to Canada before, but I'd never crossed an ocean. And I flew from America to the former Soviet Union. and that was pretty exciting. And I was with a group of other Americans, and we did a tour of different places. And one of the places we visited was Kiev, Ukraine. In the Kiev Botanic Garden, they put on a display of fruit. And there were several fruits there that I had never seen before and never thought of as commercial fruits. And I'd already been doing the nursery for a while, so I had some pretty good idea of fruit, but this was like a real eye-opener to me, a treasure chest, you might say. One I really liked was a red fruit, about maybe the size of your thumb, maybe in like an olive-sized fruit, a little bit more elongated. And I was able to get some material of that and brought it back to the United States and started growing it. And a couple of things I noticed about it that was pretty unique was that it bloomed super early, like February, with yellow flowers. And I thought to myself, just going back to our pollination question, what is going to pollinate this thing? You know, well, after a couple of years of doing this, I was making some observations, and there were real little flies of a type that I had never seen before. I mean, where'd they come from? I don't know. I still don't know.
But, and this is here in these United States.
Yeah, here at the nursery.
You smuggled. I mean, you brought some.
I didn't smuggle, no. It was easier to import plants back in 1990.
All right.
So anyway, we... you know, we've been growing this plant for a long time. It's an attractive shrub with these very early blooming yellow flowers, pollinated by little flies. And I would say it's probably it's among the earliest blooming of any fruiting plant that I know about. What I'd like to know is from the audience, what is it? What is this fruit?
Okay.
And then I have a sort of special extra credit part of it. If you happen to be a Ukrainian or Russian speaker, what is the name? And I will tell you that is in the answer eventually, but what is the Russian name of this fruit?
Okay. So, if you know the answer, or if you'd like to take a guess, 503-231-8187. Okay, we've got Matthew on the line, but I don't think Matthew has an answer because it's too soon. Okay, Matthew, what's up? No.
We lost Matt.
Matt's gone. All right, okay, Matt. Well, let's get to our second musical break here. And this is the James Harmon Band, and the title is Black and White. That's how we get the white in here. James Harmon Band. Too Right to Run.
I have walked all the way from where I could be.
I like that fill there, that bion guitar.
Yeah.
Simple, effective. Okay, Jim.
What's that, Glenn?
Olga's on the line.
Ah, Olga.
Good morning.
Dobry Jane.
Good morning, and I think this is the name, Russian name, it will be Kizil, and I bought from you a couple trees about 20 years ago when you have been in Malala, and you named them Carnelian cherry tree.
You will now have a sharpened tool. Good job, Olga. Молодец, as they say.
Yes, спасибо.
Yeah. Thank you. That's great. Yeah, you got it. Carnelian cherry, and the Russian name is Kizil.
So tell us how the plant is doing after 20 years, or plants.
You know very well. Special one, because I have two varieties, and one is better than another. One has just shape as you describe, and second has shape like a little bit like pear, a little bit. And it's not so tasty, and it's not so big, so I prefer kind of regular.
Good feedback there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, but I still have, every year I still have big crop, and you know, it's very healthy. It's good for your health, and we, with my American husband, use a lot.
And
even eat seeds sometimes, because it's good for you, sometimes.
Uh-huh. How do you use the fruit?
Well, I freeze fruit. I waiting when they became soft and sweet, because it's very sour. When it's not quite ready. When quite ready, it's already kind of late to pick them. So I put them on kind of flat space and wait when they became dark red. Then we eat them fresh. And mostly I freeze them, and we make kind of juice and compote, if you know what is it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we use a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you harvest it before it's
completely
ripe?
Completely ripe, very difficult to harvest. But yeah, a little bit before, but we're all in different kind of stage, so yeah.
It's the most flavorful and sweetest when it's fully ripe, and I agree.
Oh, Yes, it's like honey. It's like, it's very, very sweet and very wonderful. Yes.
There's your spokesperson.
And I bought from you a lot of trees and sea berry, because we know what is it. Americans don't a lot. And of course, figs and persimmons, everything from you. And black currants and red currants.
Uh-huh. And as you say all these things, I'm always thinking of the Russian names, because when I traveled to in that journey and my other subsequent journeys to the former Soviet Union, it was just fascinating to talk to people just like yourself who had experience with these different fruits that we didn't have that experience in America. So it's been a great...
And actually, we have more experience because Fei Hua, here it's named pineapple guava, what I bought from you too. And you know, when I bought from you, you tell to me, not you personally, but when you have this exhibition with kind of prepare food from fruits what we don't know yet, it was Oktoberfest in your place in Malala. It was wonderful. We remember with my husband so well. So we bought, I forget what I'm speaking even about. Remind me, Jeff.
I don't remember. We bought a lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of things. Oh, yes.
I'm her husband, and she has me eat some of these carnelian cherries with the pit in them. And she wants me to eat four or five a day when we're harvesting.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
No?
Yes.
Yeah, and she says it's very healthy. I don't know.
So, pineapple guava. When I bought, you tell to me what, in our climate, we will not have fruit. You know, I have fruit. Unbelievable. Sometimes so much and so big, a pineapple guava in our garden.
Yeah.
Every December now.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yes. It's so nice to hear from you, and to hear those stories, because you know, that's one of the fun things about discovering fruit. And I hope other, you know, listeners and people have had tried some of these things too, because it's definitely a great adventure, and the tastes are wonderful. And you know, life is short; we should enjoy it.
Yes.
Expand
yes.
your horizons.
You're right.
Yeah.
All right.
And we so appreciate this fest in October, what you used to have in Malala. I'll still remember. It's wonderful.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Olga. And if you stay on the line, if you'd like to take advantage of the free garden tool sharpening, stay on the line.
Yes, I would love to.
Okay. Ty will take your information offline here. I mean, off the air.
До свидания, Olga.
До свидания.
Okay, great. That was a great, great answer and feedback.
Yeah. I would like to talk to her more.
But
we do have a garden.
I'll have her contact information.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, let's move on here and talk about some of the... Oh, no, first of all, I'll get to the soil temperature. I'll mention just a few things about why this is important. Mostly it's important for when to plant out garden starts, vegetable starts. Generally, we for the warm season crops, that we want the soil temperature to be 70 degrees or above. What does that mean? Well, that's why I got these little few pointers here. Generally, we're going to take a soil temperature thermometer, or just really any stick thermometer, and measure 4 inches deep. And this is on bare ground, not covered with plants or mulch or compost, just bare ground, so the sun is, you know, has a chance to beat down on it some. Best timing between 1 and 2 in the afternoon. And for the warm season crops, these are the tomatoes, peppers, eggplants. That's what you want to wait for, 70 degrees. I don't know that we've had that yet. I know that people have put out tomatoes, and they're probably doing pretty darn well because we had such good weather. But if it's like this continually for a couple of weeks, then plant them out there anyway. It's probably going to be good enough. I mean, we're not going to get 70 degrees for at least a week, according to the forecast, but that's why it matters. Now, you know, 50 degrees is probably the lowest you could plant out peas and mustards, salad greens, probably even lettuce and spinach. I'd probably wait a little bit more till maybe 60 degrees for the brassicas, that meaning broccoli and cabbage, cauliflower, and others.
60-degree air temperature or soil temperature?
Soil temperature, four inches down. So not just at the top. But, it's of course, if you're planting seeds, then it's only going to be maximum of half an inch deep, so you might get around that. But most people are going to transplant in those things. Mm-hmm. You know, green beans, it's time. I think you can do that now. I haven't planted mine, but I will soon. And what I do is... I cover them up with, I've talked about this before, I create kind of a little greenhouse on the soil with just panes of glass or plexiglass. I plant the row because I plant pole beans, and so it's under a trellis. And I put glass over the planted bed, and then the sun comes down and it heats up the soil quite quickly, and I get pretty good germination. Mm-hmm. Also, on that same vein, I would recommend putting slug bait down well before you seed beans, because they're very tasty or attractive to slugs. And so try to get that slug population down before you plant. And then, of course, put some slug bait down when you plant too. And by slug bait, I'm meaning those that are considered organic, the ones that use iron phosphate as their active ingredient.
Sluggo is one.
Sluggo, yeah. Yes. Escargo. Escargo. That's another
that's pretty good.
Brand name.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to know what escargo is, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Right. Okay, we're going to take our last musical break, and then we're going to come back and talk more about what you experiments on the farm and what you've brought back, your take-home, pay
Sure.
from your overseas travel. The last one that we'll do is by the author Tony Joe White. And you may remember him from, he also penned Poke Salad Annie. But we're not going to listen to that one. We're going to listen to As the Crow Flies. This is by Anne McHugh. I think she's Australian. Got a kind of McHugh-ish in. McHugh. And this is your cue, Jim. What's going on in the farm? You're doing some plant breeding out there?
Yeah, the work continues. Right now, pretty much the bloom time has ended for most things, but we still will be doing some breeding work with feijoa. We're also interested in seeing what's going to happen with our olives this year. I'm struggling to get fruit set on my outdoor plants. They've set fruit fine in a more controlled environment. So I'm going to be watching very carefully. Olives are wind pollinated, like we mentioned earlier, and I want to make sure that I get some pollen movement from the different varieties to get some fruit set outdoors.
How do you do that inside?
We don't. So
they somehow?
It somehow happens inside.
You got fans going in there?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe, some possible, but not maybe air movement coming in from the end of the greenhouse or something. Yeah, yeah. It's moving it around. But, I don't know.
I learned something here.
I'm working on it. and so that's kind of our focus right now. And then my own personal work is thankfully the weather kind of went back to spring again. And so I'm trying to get a bunch of stuff in the ground. And some of it's figs, what I did yesterday. I love figs, and we're experimenting with some different varieties, just checking them out. What we're focused on is a type of fig that I could talk about perhaps more at another show, but it's called a San Pedro type, which is a primarily Braba crop fig, meaning that its primary crop comes on last year's wood. That's real helpful for us here in Oregon, where we don't have such warm falls to ripen the second crop. So by a fig ripening in late July, early August is perfect for us, and that's what we're focused on. But then I took a really interesting journey, this part of it was not focused on plants, which was unusual for us. When my great-great-great-grandparents went from Ireland to Tasmania in the early 1800s, and I've been wanting to go there, and I tried a couple of years ago, and we got as far as Melbourne and came down with COVID. So we did it again, and this time we made it, and we went to a 14-hour flight, San Francisco to Sydney, Australia. 14 hours is a long time to be sitting on an airplane, but But we made it, and we got to Hobart, and then we went to the small town, Evandale, where they had lived. And it was fascinating to see it. And turned out we just came, there was a book published about that town just a few weeks before we got there. And we got bought a copy of the book, and I'm in correspondence with the author, and my great-great-great-grandfather was a teacher and postmaster there and actually has a place in his book. So it's kind of fun. And then we went from Tasmania to New Zealand. This was now plant-focused work. And there are two breeders of feijoa there. The government used to support that work. It doesn't anymore. So basically, feijoa breeding and evaluation work, as far as we know, was primarily what is being done in New Zealand by these two breeders. And one of them
They're commercial breeders?
Well, they like to think of themselves that way. one is in his early 70s and the other is in his early 90s. We have varieties from both of those breeders that we offer at the nursery, and they all have the native Maori names like Kakariki, Kaitiri, Takaka, but they're really good. And they're best, as far as we know, they're the best in the world. I mean, there's no other. They're large and flavorful and super, super good varieties.
So are those available here?
Yeah. Most of the nurseries, probably most of the local nurseries would have them.
Well, what's the nature of their, just got about a minute left here, Jim. What's the nature of their experimenting now?
One of the breeders is working on storage. He wants to get varieties that will store a long time, because one of the problems with them is shipping them overseas. You know, there's only so many New Zealanders, and they have more fruit now than they can seem to eat. So they want to ship them, but they need more longer storage life. The other was looking for late ripening, which also has to do with storage, but also just timing wise, having a fruit that's a little later in the season. But I keep encouraging them for early ripening. I say, you know, you guys, we'll market your plants here in America if you can get us some early ripening ones. Uh-huh. And my personal interest is thin skin that is good to eat.
Right. And I remember you mentioning that sometime in the past.
And some of the ones we have are that they're good that way. I mean, they're, but yeah. So it's
One last question here that I thought of. So that's, they're in the southern hemisphere. So how do plants just effortlessly make the switch to growing in the northern hemisphere?
It kind of depends on the plant. I mean, we found with the feijoa that, generally speaking, it doesn't need a long chilling period. So if you have a cutting that you bring back from there, it can usually take off right away and be okay. But if you were doing other plants that require a chilling period, it's more difficult, obviously, because you've got to try to figure out a way to get the timing so that you're they've got some cold time before you graft them and grow them here.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there.
Well, it's been fun, Glenn.
Indeed it has. So look for our show next month, but it will be on tape if all goes according to plan. Thanks a lot, Ty. We appreciate you getting up early and staying with us, our board operator. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back in a month.
And happy gardening, everybody.
Be well.
Listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 12 o'clock noon.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.